Hello and welcome. You're listening to Writers Aloud, a podcast brought to you by writers for the Royal Literary Fund in London. Hello and welcome to episode 161 of Writers Aloud. In this episode, journalist and novelist Diana Evans speaks with Frances Burns about how story and real-life story aren't the same thing, what you really need to be a writer, writing versus dancing, and the need for more black writers.
Diana Evans was already a writer, a journalist and critic when a terrible personal loss galvanised her to write her first novel, 26A. 26A centres on a Nigerian English family following the family's twin girls to early adulthood in a London suburb. It won the Orange Award for New Writers. Diana's second book, The Wonder, is a dance mystery set in 60s London and 50s Jamaica, based on her own experience of dancing with a Brighton-based African and Caribbean dance group, Mashango.
What are you really engaged with in a writing sense at the moment? What's in your mind?
Well, I've just come to the end of a novel that I have been working on for several years, so I'm in the editing stage at the moment. It's a novel about marriage and motherhood, and it's set in London over the first year of Barack Obama's presidency. It was inspired by my own experience of becoming a mother and the change of identity that that brought about. And I was inspired by reading lots of other books. I was inspired a lot by John Updike, the Rabbit novels, and also Couples, and also by Richard Yates's Revolutionary Road, which are novels about domestic life and about the experience of marriage and the conflict between the sexes within a marriage, the difficulties of parenting, the relationships between parents and their children. And but what was really missing for me in those books by Updike and Yates was the female perspective seemed to be kind of glossed over, and there wasn't enough empathy with the woman's side of the story, I felt. And so I wanted to fill that gap and bring in the woman's experience of domesticity. And another aspect of the inspiration for it was that there didn't seem to be this kind of fiction about black people, black British people in the contemporary age. And I really wanted to walk into a bookshop and to pick up a book that had people like me in it. A book that wasn't necessarily about the common overriding themes in black writing, such as race and migration and slavery. I wanted to just write about ordinary life in the context of black life.
What are the sort of challenges for you if you're really paying attention to your own experience?
Well, that was one of the main challenges in writing this book. How close am I allowed to get to my own experience? And you always have to be aware of a certain level of respectfulness accorded to the people who might be involved in recording that experience, people who are linked to my own experience, my family. And I think my writing has always been inspired by my own responses to things and my own very intense feelings about things and experiences of life. That's always been what has made me write. I started writing in a journal when I was in my teens. And that necessity to be connected to the material has always been there for me in my writing. So when I am actually working with this personal material, I always give myself the permission to be as frank as I want and to be respectful to not only the people who are implicated in it, but also to the world of literature as a whole, to the country of literature as a whole. So I try and balance those two things, that level of respect accorded to those two things at once, which can be tricky.
I'm really struck by how fiction writers also seem to feel part of a world of writing, in the sense that you read each other.
Yes, we do read each other.
It's not really obvious, but it actually it does sound like a world, a quite moral world. Yeah.
It's a conversation. I see writing as one big conversation. Writers are all talking with each other. We're all exchanging ideas and questioning morality and reality and trying to probe reality. It's about communication.
If you come back to, say, paying attention to your own experience, do you still write a journal?
I do sometimes, not as often as I used to. Maybe because I've been writing from biographical material for the last few years. So perhaps there's been less inclination to record things in my journal. But I have drawn a lot on journal material in the current novel. But I always, once something is included in a novel, there is a distance between it in its journal form and in its novel form. There's a distance that you have to establish even when you're writing about your own life. It's still really crucial to establish a distance from the material. Otherwise, it's unwritable as fiction, I think.
And is that a process that just takes time, or are there knacks to it?
It takes time. It's also about the narrative style that you decide to use. I tend to write in the third person. It's also about whose viewpoint you choose to use. Sometimes I will use somebody else's viewpoint to get distance from the material. So what I did in my first book, 26A, I had been trying to write that book for a long time. It was inspired by my twin passing away, and the actual idea to write about it came, I think, within months, probably within 6 months. But I didn't start actually writing it for about a year after that. And once I started writing it, there were about 2 years of trying to write it and not really being able to write it because I hadn't found the voice yet. And I knew I wanted to write it as a novel, not as a memoir, but it was tending to come out as memoir, which is why it wasn't working. I was too close to the material. So I did two things. I took myself off to Norwich to do the MA in creative writing. And once I was there, the second thing I did was that I changed the narration, the voice, to the child voice, and that's when it finally worked. So writing it from the child viewpoint gave me the distance being an adult, and that's what made the book happen finally.
And that works because to you, because it became something that was happening outside you?
Yes, exactly. That's when Georgia and Bessie, the twins in the book, that's when they became characters. And that's when I could apply my novelist's imagination to them as characters. And I couldn't really do that before because I wasn't writing from the point of view of a character. I think you have to have a solid character in place before you can write fiction, whether it's personal fiction or whether it's an idea from outside your own life. There has to be a sense of character that comes first for me.
So if you were writing memoir, you can't experience yourself as character?
You can, but memoir is much more direct and the material is more exposed. It's not a story, it's a real life story, which is different from a story. Even though a story in a novel can come from real life, if something is told in the real life voice, then it loses that distance that you get from a novel, from characters in a novel.
Did you write in grief?
No, I often get asked the question whether writing 26A was cathartic, and it really wasn't. It was actually the opposite, because the idea of catharsis is that it makes you feel better eventually, or it makes you go through a process of grieving, which then finishes and you're replenished in some way by the experience. But it was much more I had to kind of, because of that distance that I needed to establish, I had to actually put my emotions on hold for a very long time, and I couldn't really go through the proper grieving process because I was stuck in this time warp, I guess you could describe it, where I was this one person writing this book, but this other person who hadn't really grieved yet. So the grieving process actually came more afterwards. And I think I don't really see grieving as a process that ends. I think your life adapts to things that happen and you become that new person. So you carry these things through your life and find ways to adjust to the fact of them. But I don't really see a sense of finality in the process of grieving. One of the things, well, the main thing that I set out to do in writing 26A was to kind of build a monument to my twin. I wanted something to exist in the world, to show the world that she'd existed and that she was a person and that she was important. I didn't want her to disappear. And I'm really glad that I achieved that. I feel that I achieved what I set out to achieve.
And also, I wondered if you wanted to keep hold of the world that the twins are in, or different worlds that they're in, or really given life. And I thought, oh, is there some way that you want to keep the world conjured as well as the people?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was writing the book, I saw it as writing about the inside of the twin relationship and what it felt like. And it was only when I went to UEA and was sharing this world of twins with other people, the other writers on the course, through reading it to them and them giving me feedback, they really helped me to see it from the outside, that kind of really fascinating aspect of the twin world and the idea of sharing this kind of identity and the kind of stereotypical images of twinness, such as the two girls in summer dresses and the idea of telepathy, these really obvious commercial ideas associated with twinness. And so I actually started, when I started putting those images into the book, it really started to come alive in a different way. And I felt that I was experiencing new things about twinness that I hadn't actually realised were there when I was within them. Do you see what I mean? Because writing about things helps you make them real in a way. They become more explicit and more alive to you.
At the point that you first decided that you wanted to write about what happened between you and your twin, or to your twin, so that's 6 months after you lost
about
her.
About 6 months.
Did you already call yourself a writer?
Yes, I was writing short stories at that time and poems, and I wanted to write something longer, but I didn't know what I wanted to write yet. So I did see myself as a writer, but I was still in the process of finding what kind of writer I was. Poems had become too enclosed for me after a while, and I wanted to sprawl around a bit more, so I started to write stories, which became very tricky to get to the point of what the story was, and then journalism was too kind of bossy. I couldn't really be as creative as I wanted to be with the language. I mean, it was very good training in terms of being succinct and writing to deadline and being clear. I think it's good training for writing fiction. But there definitely are limits to the amount of freedom that you have in the context of journalism. But I think when my twin died, that was the moment when I felt that I actually had a story that I really wanted to tell. It was it was cataclysmic in dimension, that moment. And I remember specifically sitting down on the sofa and realising that I wanted to write this story. Yeah, but I was definitely calling myself a writer at that point already. But I think the process of writing that book helped me to find out what kind of writer that I wanted to be and what kind of writer I could be. I think before going off to UEA to write, I had this idea of writing being this kind of mystical job, and sort of you're in this kind of magical state and you produce these wonderful, perfect reams of prose, and it should come out very easily. But I think just in the process of being really immersed in the world of writing and the technicalities of writing, I kind of realised that actually it's much harder than that, and that writing doesn't come out the way you want it to come out. Because I think I went to UA with this sense of disappointment that I've been working on this book for such a long time, or what felt to me such a long time at that time, and I still didn't really have anything. I didn't have a real beginning or end, but I learned that rewriting is so crucial, that that's what kind of makes something happen. And I think I found my process through realizing that I have to write things in scenes first. I write a collection of scenes, and then once I have enough scenes, then I can start arranging them, rather than writing from the beginning to the end of the story, which is what I had tried to do initially. It really doesn't happen like that for me. There are other more practical things that I learnt, such as the importance of commitment to writing. There's this doggedness that you need to be a writer, and it really is about sitting down every day with an intention to produce work and produce words and pages. And there's nothing kind of glamorous or mystical about writing in that sense.
So have you thought about writing drama, using scenes in that way?
I've written a short play as a part of my novel that I've just finished, which was my first attempt at writing a play or writing in scenes in that way. And it was really good fun, actually. And I do have an idea for a TV drama that I'd really like to write at some point. I always used to feel really put off by the idea of writing plays or script, because it was just dialogue. And I love writing prose and I love description. And the fact that you just can't do that in scripts really put me off. But actually, it's really good fun, because I do really love writing dialogue, because a character just becomes so alive. Yeah, so actually trying it to write a script was quite a revelation for me, how close you can get to the characters.
How do you think that having been a dancer has affected your writing?
They're so separate from each other, my dancing self and my writing self. I don't think dancing has affected my writing in any way that I can think of. They're just they're poles apart from each other, which is why I had to decide at some point whether I wanted to be a dancer or a writer. When I was a dancer, I never imagined that I would write about dancing. I had been a dance reviewer, and I'd written lots of reviews of dance shows and dance performances, but I never actually thought I'd write about dancing in fiction. But then it just happened. What I loved about it most was writing about movement and describing movement. And that was what I really wanted to do when I was writing The Wonder. That was one of the main ambitions of the book, was to try and encapsulate the experience of movement, both for the dancer and for the person who's watching the dance. So it was an experiment in a way to see how close I could get to movement just through writing. Because writing is so sedentary, you're so rooted to one spot. And I probably struggle with that because of this dancer that lives inside me. So I try to find ways of movement on the page. So I use chapter breaks, or I love a lyrical language that has a sense of movement in it. But being able to actually describe dancing was riveting for me when I was writing that book. Music's also very important, and I've written about music quite a lot in the book I've just finished. When I'm writing, a book tends to have a soundtrack. With this book especially, I was listening to lots of Michael Jackson and contemporary R&B and soul music and reggae music, and the music helped me stay in the world of the novel. Actually, it helped bring the material to life.
You know how you've gone away to write sometimes? Mm. Obviously, you write at home, but you also sometimes go away to write. What's the call of going away to write on retreats or whatever?
It's all about the distance. Again, it always comes back to distance from one's own life and the access that gives you to more of yourself, to more of your imagination. I've always been really inspired by place, by places and different locations, and I love describing places, so it's a way of finding more material to write about as well. It's about feeding the well of material and ideas. I've always really liked writing on trains, not properly writing a story or working on a novel. I can't really do that on a train, but more little bits of writing, lines and images that occur to me. I think the more you see of the world, I think you become a better writer. I always enjoy the journey more than I enjoy actually being there. I always enjoy the movement. That's why I love trains so much. And there's always a sense of something being lost when you get there. A sense of freedom. I think it's free. It's about freedom. That desire for freedom, liberty of self, which I think is what inspires me. I feel very lucky to be able to write for a living, because you're less kind of limited by, you know, the demands of kind of office work or being in the rat race, that kind of thing. And so travelling and going off to retreats is a way of living that freedom, I think.
Do you mind or do you resist the racial, you know, being required to represent a group of people? Do you mind that or do you even feel it?
I do feel it. I do feel that there's this expectation that my writing represents blackness, or that it encapsulates the experience of blackness, or speaks for a group of people. But I've always kind of resisted that and preferred to just write about the themes that I'm really interested in and write about what really fascinates me. I think that's the crux of what writers have to do. You have to write about what fascinates you, what interests you. It is one of my desires to see more black characters in fiction and in mainstream fiction. I think there's a real dearth of black writers in the UK, and we need much, much more of them. But I see myself as just one small dot in that area. I'd like it to grow bigger.
That was Diana Evans in conversation with Frances Burns. You can find out more about Diana on her website at www.diana-evans.com. And that concludes episode 161, which was recorded by Frances Burns and produced by Kona McPhee. Coming up in episode 162, non-fiction writer and novelist Tobias Jones speaks with James McConaughey about the dark heart of Italy during the Berlusconi era and his experiences as a Briton living in and documenting the real Italy beyond the journalistic bubble of Rome. We hope you'll join us. You've been listening to Writers Aloud, a podcast brought to you by writers for the Royal Literary Fund in London. To subscribe to podcasts and to find out more about the work of the RLF, please visit our website at www.rlf.org.uk. Thanks for listening.